I hear the music. I hear the music. All right. Hello, everybody. This is Chuck Finney, and we're doing our program. This is something that probably I hope you are interested in. I think the whole nation should be interested in. The United States Supreme Court, 8 justices at standstill. Is the court dysfunctional? That's our topic tonight. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. I have some really interesting guests here who are very knowledgeable about this. And if you are listening to the program live, we're doing this on Wednesday evening, April 6th, and you're listening to the whole hour, of course, I will give the toll-free number, and you can call in the second half hour. And I urge you to call in if you have questions about the Supreme Court, questions about constitutional law. This will be the time for you to join us with your comments, your questions, your concerns. My guests are Jeffrey Hayden, Vice Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. He has an office in Redwood City. I've known Jeff for many, many years. He is a great guest on this program, a great supporter of what we're doing to try to educate all of us about the law. A new guest here, this is his, and I want all of you to be gentle with him, by the way, is Gonzalo Martinez. He's a specialist in appellate law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His first time on the air, but I think he's going to be okay.
Very excited to be here.
Good. Glad to have you here. And I've got somebody here who's been here a number of times, so I don't care how you deal with him. Myron Moskowitz is here. Myron is now an appellate law attorney. He's a retired professor of constitutional law, Golden Gate University. Myron's been a great, great friend of mine for a number of years. And you know where he started? He started with landlords hating him because he was one of the authors of the NOLO book on landlord-tenant law.
Yeah, that was...
Come closer. Now,
that
come
was a long time ago, Chuck.
Well, yes, it was. It was. I've been doing this program for 32 years. Myron, would you do this? Set the stage for us. We, with Justice Scalia's death, we now have essentially, I think all of us know, a 4-4. There are 4 conservatives. There are 4 who are might be referred to as liberals. How do you evaluate what we're confronted with?
Yeah, it's a very unusual situation. Obviously, this has happened before for a very short time. Somebody dies, retires. President appoints somebody, have some Senate hearings. They usually, in a matter of a month or two, the position's filled and you're back to 9 justices. But now we have 8, and that really affects how the court operates and then, of course, the substance of the law in various ways. A couple of rules the Supreme Court has that you have to appreciate to understand the whole discussion we're going to have tonight. One is if there's not a majority to reverse a lower court decision, that decision stands. That's the basic rule. So if it's 4-4, that's a tie, and whatever the lower court decision stands.
By lower court, you mean a federal court of appeal.
Well, it could be a federal appellate court. It could be a state court.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't matter wherever it comes from. That decision will stand unless there's a majority to reverse it. So it's a bit misleading to pick up the paper and read the Supreme Court just affirmed a decision holding something conservative or something liberal. It doesn't mean the majority of the court was either conservative or liberal. It just means they couldn't get a muster of the votes to reverse. So the way the court has been handling it so far is they don't even bother writing an opinion. They just say it's 4-4 and it's affirmed, and there's no precedent at all from that kind of a decision.
No precedent as far as the Supreme Court is concerned.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, so the lower court stands. The other rule you have to keep in mind is how the Supreme Court decides to take a case. Now, it takes 4 votes to take a case. That hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's four votes in favor of taking
a case. In favor
of
it. It's called a writ of certiorari.
All right.
when they take a case. They take very, very few. It's under 10% of the applications for certiorari granted. But it takes 4 votes. Now, if you have 9 justices, it's far more likely you're going to get the 4 than if you have 8 justices.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be taking fewer cases for that reason. Also, if the handwriting's on the wall, if they take a case, it's going to be a 4-4 split. Why bother? So that's going to cut down on the number of cases they take for that reason, too. And this has already started to happen, apparently. There was a study done recently that showed since Scalia died in that whatever 2-month time period, the number of grants of certiorari has dropped off precipitously. And I think that'll continue until we get a nominee confirmed and get back up to 9 justices.
Well, of course, right now, all of us know that Judge Merrick Garland has been pushed forward by President Obama. And,
yeah,
of course, the Senate, the leader of the Senate, Senator McConnell, is not in favor of this at all and been very, very adamant about this. So
yeah,
are we going to essentially, can you tell us, are we going to see for the balance of this year and not until maybe February of next year, 2017, we're going to see that essentially the Supreme Court is going to, in civil cases, not necessarily criminal, is going to be essentially dysfunctional?
Yeah, let's talk.
What are they going to do? Are they going to go out to the golf course and stuff, or what are they going to do?
That's a good question.
No, yeah, I'm serious.
They
about
might
this.
Take it easy. Well, there's 2 halves to the question you just asked. What's going to happen during the rest of Obama's term until
yes,
we get a new president? From my reading of the paper, I think enough of the Republican senators are adamant that they're not going to hold hearings and not confirm. There's been some talk about after the November election and before both the new Senate and new president take office during that interim for about 2 months, they could do something then. It all depends who wins the election.
Mm-hmm.
If the Democrats win the election, that could well happen, that they hold hearings and approve Garland because he's more moderate than someone that either Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton might appoint.
Mm-hmm.
So that could well happen. If the Republicans win in the election, no, they're not going to do that. They're going to mm-hmm. wait till the Republican takes office.
Yeah.
And let's see how this plays out. So if they don't approve Garland during that period and a Democrat takes office and you still have a Republican-controlled Senate, which is iffy.
We still have
given
a real
what's
problem.
Happened. That may not happen.
We still
so,
have
but
real
if you have a Republican Senate, a Democratic president come January, this thing could go on even longer.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Just terrible. Let me throw it to you, Gonzalo. There's a case that I know you wanted to talk about, Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association, which related to teachers brought the action. Who Friedrichs, this is one of the teachers, brought the action on behalf of other teachers who are not union members,
mm-hmm.
teachers, not members of teachers' unions in California, saying that I don't want to have to pay union dues if I'm not a member. Can you talk about this very briefly, and what is the significance of this at this point?
Certainly. Friedrichs was a very interesting case, and it actually went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And by a vote of 4-4, the court basically said, we're not able to resolve this the lower court's ruling is affirmed. And what that effectively did is it upheld what the Ninth Circuit had done. And the Ninth Circuit had ruled, based on prior Supreme Court precedent, that a union was able – or a union could charge union dues to non-members in part to cover the costs of collective bargaining in particular. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to a 1976 case by the name of Abood, where the U.S. Supreme Court essentially held that a union essentially has a duty to fairly represent all its members, including folks who aren't part of the union. And to cover the costs of collective bargaining, they're assessed part of the fee. Now, when non-union members pay dues, they don't pay for example, the lobbying expenses, but they do pay for collective bargaining expenses, which includes contract negotiations, grievance processing. So Friedrichs was a very important case because the Supreme Court had kind of reached out in three different cases over the past few terms, slowly cutting away at Abood. And there was a great fear among union members that Friedrichs was essentially going to be the death knell for public sector labor unions.
Across the country?
Right, across the country.
I see. This particular case now, this decision, and this just came down very recently, didn't it? The 4-4
yes.
decision just very recently of the justices. This now only applies, though, in California, does it not? It doesn't apply to other states in the United States.
Right, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Anything else? I didn't want to cut you off. But
What was interesting about Friedrichs is that 2 days ago, the Supreme Court essentially turned down a very similar case. And the reason that's interesting is because had Justice Scalia still been on the court, when Friedrichs essentially would probably have gone against the unions, and had Justice Scalia or someone of a similar sort of conservative take been on the court now, they might have taken up the case as well.
So you are saying if Justice Scalia had not died and was involved in the decision on Friedrichs, it would have been in favor of the plaintiffs?
Yes.
The non-union teachers?
I think
that
was the general consensus.
Would you agree with that, Myron?
Totally. I mean, that was the prediction that Abood was dead. Just a matter of hearing the case, issuing an opinion, and it was going to be 5-4. I mean, it was a dead certainty. And then Scalia dies, and this is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. He dies. Now it's 4-4. That means the lower court opinion is affirmed. The lower court had to follow Abood because that was the law at the time, no matter how they felt.
Supreme Court, Abood was a Supreme Court decision.
Yeah. So that's it. Abood is the law. Until Supreme Court overrules it, now that Scalia is gone and the proposal is to replace him with a Democrat, it's unlikely to happen, in our lifetime.
Let me turn to Jeff. Jeff, you're a certified specialist in criminal law at the California Board of Legal Specialization. So you're our man on the criminal aspect of the Supreme Court. What do you have to say about the situation now where we have only 8 justices? Does this make a difference in the criminal law area?
I think it makes less of a difference in criminal than it does in civil for a couple different reasons. Justice Scalia was a strong proponent of the Fourth Amendment, our rights against search and seizure, and for that he will be missed. But in general, I'm looking at various cases that have come out of the Supreme Court in the last year or two, and what I'm finding is that in criminal, the decisions tend not to be 5-4.
Mm-hmm.
They're very likely that they're much more likely to have an agreement between the various justices that's either per curiam, where the court writes as a whole, or 8-1 or 7-2, they're much broader in their consensus. And I could go through a few of those in really short order if you'd like.
Just briefly, if you would, I'm trying to figure out, and I'm not really being facetious, but if we have in the civil area as opposed to the criminal area, we have essentially a standoff in the civil area, 4-4, what then, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think the majority of cases before the U.S. Supreme Court are in the civil area versus criminal, aren't they, Myron, or are they, generally speaking?
I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't? Okay.
No.
What then, my concern is, all right, here we are. This could go on until sometime next year. And as you said, Myron, if Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton becomes president, we're probably still going to have the same problem.
If there's a Republican Senate.
Well,
if the Democratic Senate.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I don't think the Senate's going to change that fast.
I wouldn't bet on that.
You wouldn't? Okay.
Well, I mean, Trump could bring down the whole Republican Senate.
Oh, hey.
If he's the nominee.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Oh, my. Yeah. No, let's not get into him. What I'm wondering is, in your opinion, Myron, as having been a constitutional professor for most of your legal career, as I recall, and that's over 40 years.
Thanks for reminding me, Chuck.
Well, hey, I've been a lawyer for 50 years, although I look very young.
You
I
do. Mean, you know. Yeah.
What am I being facetious when I say, what are the justices doing? What are these eight justices doing with respect to the fact that many of these cases are 4-4? Are they actually working? Are they doing anything?
Taking up golf.
No,
crochet.
I'm sure. No, I'm not being facetious. What are they doing? In your opinion,
they're trying to put a good face on this.
Well, yeah,
you know, Alito says business as usual, and we can still operate with eight. And you have to understand that the public.
Jeff has a he's got his cell phone here with a bobbing head of Donald Trump. I wish you all could see this, but go ahead, Myron.
The public sees these very high-profile disputes about abortion, about Citizens United, gun control, things like that.
Immigration.
Yeah, those are very important. But the majority of cases in the Supreme Court are not like that.
Yeah.
And the majority of them don't divide 5-4
okay.
or 4-4.
All right.
And, you know,
okay.
they got a lot of work on those cases.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let
but,
me.
But I can add something to what Jeff said on this
if
criminal
you would,
thing.
Please.
Yeah. Alito was not just another vote. He had a very, very strong personality.
You mean Scalia.
I'm sorry, Scalia.
Yeah.
Very strong personality. He's noted for his vitriolic dissents, you know. But the flip side of that was when he was in the majority, he was very strong also.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Fourth Amendment opinions that Jeff alluded to, he was the leader. I mean, mm-hmm. some of those were rather... I used to teach this stuff, and, you know, there were extraordinary opinions. Holding the one that really struck me was the case involving a thermal imager where the police go by a house with a device that can detect heat, excess heat coming off the house.
The marijuana case, right?
Well, it was a marijuana grow inside gave off excess heat.
Right.
And the big question was whether that really intrude on anybody's privacy mm-hmm. because all it's detecting is heat that's coming off the house anyway.
Yeah.
And Scalia says, well, maybe a lady's taking a shower and you'll know that from the heat coming off, which I thought was kind of a stretch. But that's the way he was.
Yeah.
And he wasn't by himself. He managed to get a majority for those opinions. And there were several of them like that. So now that he's gone, there's nobody like that mm-hmm. has that kind of power. Mm-hmm. Even in majority or the dissent, Justice Garland, not Justice, Judge Garland now, if he becomes a justice, he's kind of known as a very mild, moderate type of person, generally defers to the government. Mm-hmm. So a very different type of character from Scalia. The other thing to note is—
Can you tell us, though, with this imaging— heat imaging device that the
yeah.
police used. What was the decision in that case?
Scalia decided that was an invasion of privacy.
Yeah, okay.
Therefore, a search. Therefore, you had to have probable cause and a warrant.
It was an illegal search.
It was an illegal search.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I want to mention the case that just came down a couple of days ago called Lewis versus United States. Lewis was a woman who was in the healthcare profession, and she committed... alleged to have committed fraud, mm-hmm. healthcare fraud in Florida. Now, she had money and she wanted to hire a lawyer. Sixth Amendment gives you right to counsel, to hire a lawyer. The government said the money she has breaks down into two parts. One is money she obtained from the fraud.
Yeah.
And the cases are clear that the government can seize that money before trial to make sure that she doesn't abscond with it. And she said, okay, I won't use that money to hire a lawyer, but I got some other money that's not connected with this thing. Mm-hmm. And the government said, we want that too, because we're going to be looking for a restitution order to help the victims, fines. And the lower court said, yeah, you can grab that too.
Mm-hmm.
And Supreme Court reversed. Supreme Court, the majority said that the
this is by the current court right now.
It just came down a couple
just
days
came down.
Ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
The court said that Sixth Amendment right to counsel gives her a right to counsel of her choice, use her own money for that. Government can't seize it. Okay. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about the case is how it broke down in terms of the justices. Mm-hmm. It was 5-3.
Uh-huh.
Who are the five? Roberts, Breyer, conservative liberal; Thomas Sotomayor, conservative liberal; and Ginsburg, a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Dissenting: Kennedy, Kagan, and Alito.
That's very
all right.
Kagan,
so,
I find Kagan in there to be surprising.
Well, she was the government's lawyer for a long time.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? You couldn't predict that lineup if you were kind of stuck in this traditional notion of four liberals, four conservatives. It didn't line up that way at all.
Very interesting. Let me do this because we're getting close to the end of the statewide version of the program. And of course, unfortunately, as you all know, we never have enough time to spend really doing as much justice as I would like to do to the law. President Obama there's a matter on immigration before the U.S. Supreme Court right now. Where he has ordered that I think it's something like 5+ million people who are not here, who are undocumented here, cannot be just thrown out of the country. What comments do you gentlemen have about this? Do you have any comments on that, Gonzalo?
You know, what would be interesting here is that if I guess the case is going to be heard on the 18th of April.
Of this month, yes.
So it's coming up. There is the sense, though, that there might be a 4-4 split, and that would be unfortunate for the administration, in part because what would happen is the Fifth Circuit order enjoining the president's actions would essentially be
stopping
upheld.
Stopping the action of the president.
Exactly.
So that would end up, if there's a 4-4 split, that these people could be put out of the country. Is that right?
Right. The program would essentially be it wouldn't be able to go into effect. And the one that's already in effect, which is DACA, Deferred Action for Children of Arrivals, I understand is currently in effect, but it might be stopped.
Yeah, incredible. One last case.
The related case is very similar.
Yeah.
Involves the Environmental Protection Agency and Obama's effort to, deal with coal.
Yes.
And very similar type of situation. The issue in both cases is, has the president overstepped his bounds?
Mm-hmm.
And they're both in front of the court.
Incredible. What do you think is going to happen there? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I don't see it breaking down easily into conservative-liberal split because the question of the authority of the president affects both Democratic and Republican presidents. So if they slap down Obama, that's going to limit the powers of a Republican president. If there is one.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. I hope the Republicans are listening to what you're saying here.
Yeah.
There is another case, one very briefly, where you wanted to talk about this, Myron. And Fisher versus University of Texas is an affirmative action case. In this one, Justice Kagan, Elena Kagan, recused herself. So now we have, instead of 4-4, or 8 justices, we have 7 justices. Briefly talk about that, and then we're going to have to take a brief break and then let people who would like to listen to or actually call in and talk with you, talk with the three of you.
8 is an even number. 7's an odd number.
Right.
You could get a majority. Yeah. It could go 4-3.
Why did she recuse herself?
She was the Solicitor General when this case was coming up.
So she was there in the early years of this case.
Yeah.
And appropriately for her, ethically speaking,
she
would recuse herself from this decision.
Yeah.
So in effect, what would you predict if there's a 4-3? What could possibly happen? And I think it relates to the University of Texas not giving some kind of preference to young black people who are coming to the university. Do I have that correct?
Yeah. Well, it's not as stark as some of the earlier affirmative action programs, which said race is everything. Here, race is relevant, but not everything. But some of the justices, like Roberts and Scalia and Thomas, were all saying that should never happen. Never consider race.
All right, everybody. This is it. I want to give you an opportunity to call in. One of the funny things about this, we got off to a funny start. The clock here, which is supposed to be accurate, was 5 minutes slow. So, you know, we never know. Sometimes the ghosts are here. Who knows? In any event, I want to give you our toll-free number. If you have a question, a comment, something you'd like to say to my guest, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I felt, and I hope you do too, that it was important that we do a program on the United States Supreme Court at this point. With, unfortunately, the death of Justice Scalia. There are 8 justices, essentially, as I think probably all of you know. 4 are very conservative. The other 4 are more on the liberal side. And so it could be on some of these cases a 4-4 vote where the Supreme Court really, by doing that, makes the lower court, whether it's the Federal Court of Appeal decision or whether it's a state court that comes directly up to the Supreme Court, that decision would hold. So it wouldn't be an actual decision by the Supreme Court justices. My guests are Myron Moskowitz, appellate law attorney. He is a retired professor of constitutional law at Golden Gate University Law School in San Francisco. Gonzalo Martinez is a certified specialist in appellate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Squire Patton Boggs. How many law offices do you have? That's a major law firm. How many offices?
I think I've seen 21 offices in 42 offices in 21 countries.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Okay. And then my final guest, last but certainly not least, is Jeff Hayden. Jeff is the vice chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He is a certified specialist in criminal law, and his office is in Redwood City. So I want to encourage you, if you have questions, we do have people who would like to talk with you, and this is really something that I think makes it fun for all of us. What I'm going to ask you to do, Martin, if you would, because the clock in here is off, I'd like you to come in and make it correct, if you would, because, frankly, I want to make sure. Jeff, what time do you have, California time do you have?
I have 7:28 for at least the
7:28.
Next minute.
Okay, all right. So it is 7:28. That's fine. Okay. Everybody, we will give you the time as you want. Okay. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question which is maybe more political than legal, and it's this. Aren't the Republicans taking a huge chance by toughing it out and not trying to get the best deal they can from Obama that maybe they'll lose the Senate as well and end up with a very liberal judge and they have no way of stopping it? Isn't that a risk that they're taking?
Yeah, please.
From what I understand, they are gambling that and coming forward with the idea that if the Democrats win in the general election, then they will go on with confirmation hearings with President Obama's current pick, because otherwise they risk that whether it's President-elect Clinton or President-elect Sanders, either one would pick a more liberal potential justice than President Obama has picked, knowing that he has this, you know, that he's facing a Republican Senate and that he's a lame duck and doesn't have a lot of cards to play. Mm-hmm. They're assuming that they can buy that and that will hold it. I think they are taking a tremendous risk. I think also politically, it's tremendously disrespectful that within hours of Justice Scalia's death, they were coming forward and saying, we're not going to hold any confirmation hearings. We're holding our ground. Yeah. The man was a tremendous influence on the law for a generation, and I think that they are really risking their own base. That's my political opinion, but I think that there's something there.
I don't totally agree. I think collectively Jeff is right that they are taking that chance. Individually, I think each one of them is legitimately afraid of alienating their base if they don't do this, and they'd rather lose this issue than lose their seat.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I think they're right.
What do you mean you think they're
right? I think
right?
Given the mood of the electorate in their districts, they're probably right.
Right that they want to save their seat as opposed to
That's
saving
politics.
Their country.
I don't mean that's morally right.
I know that.
I think it's a politically sound decision for each one of them.
No question about it. No question about it. All right, again, everybody, we've got the lines all blinking. So, Ruth Ann, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, hi there. I wanted to ask the guests what their thoughts were on the consensus has been that Merrick Garland is a centrist, et cetera, and so forth. But my thought is that if someone comes as being a prosecutor, which I was under the impression he was, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. You're
that
right.
That doesn't strike me as someone very centrist. That strikes me as someone who's been operating in favor of the government and prosecuting cases. That I'm wondering, my question is, has there ever been someone nominated who's been a public defender? I was under the impression that someone who was a public defender was on Obama's short list, but that never got to the real list.
Let's get some comments for you, Ruth Ann. Thank you very much. Good, very good question. Thank you for calling in.
That is a good question.
Yeah.
You know, Sotomayor was a prosecutor. Earl Warren was a prosecutor.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily, you know, of course, Warren was the,
Chief
Justice
attorney.
That came down with Miranda and all these decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, someone could be a centrist or even a leftist and still be a prosecutor. Public defender? No, I've never heard of any. Part of the problem is how you get to be on the Supreme Court. Most of them, not all, are taken from the ranks of current judges. Mm-hmm. Most of the current judges come up through prosecutor's offices.
Yes,
that's
right.
Who governors like.
Yeah.
So,
And of course, Chief Justice Warren, in his earlier career, was the district attorney for Alameda County.
That's right.
Yeah. And then he became the governor, of course, et cetera. All right, everybody, be active. Let's see who else would like to call in here, I want to get you on the air. I want to have your question. I want to get your comment. I mean, that's what this program's all about, to give you an opportunity to be a part of this team of live public radio. We are, by the way, next week, in case you are interested, we are going to do a program on the Americans with Disabilities Act and the responsibilities of small businesses to comply with that. I mean, this is a federal law. And I'm going to have people who are, of course, in primarily in the San Francisco area talk about this. But in case you are interested, what we're going to be talking about is really not only applicable to the San Francisco area, the California area, but across the country in terms of how the ADA applies to small businesses and what small businesses have to do. So join us for that. And Nancy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I am so disgusted. I find this situation with the Republican senators so appalling, and I am just wondering, is there any way that they can be forced to deal with this?
Well, now that's a good one. Do you know of some hitmen, Nancy?
Oh, don't I wish.
No, it's a legitimate question.
I know it is. I just couldn't help myself. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Even though I've retired as a con law professor, I'm still on a list with a bunch of them. They've been talking about that issue as to whether could someone sue the Senate and force them to hold
hearings? Boy, I wish we could.
And the answer is no. No one has standing. And it's, you know, the Senate's role comes from a very short language in the Constitution that says the Senate shall advise and consent to any nomination. Well, are they doing that? I mean, are they advising the president back off until the election? Is that satisfying their constitutional duty? And even if there were a court order, hold the hearings, you know what's going to happen with the votes. So it ain't going to happen.
Okay. You know. Jeff, you know you have something.
Well, again, we're back to the question of individually acting to protect your seat versus acting as a whole to protect the Senate. And one would think that if individual senators said no hearings to try to protect their individual seats and they ended up losing the Senate, maybe some of them would face some comeuppance when they come up again, whether it be 2 years or 4 years or mm-hmm. 6 years out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't help you, Nancy, does it? I guess she's gone. But thank you, Nancy, very much for calling. Kevin, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, good evening. I have two questions, a serious one about the Supremes and a lighthearted one. Upcoming.
Be sure to tell us which is which.
Kevin, let me interrupt. You need to you need to tell us which one is the serious one, okay?
I think it'll be obvious.
That was Myron who came up with that one. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'll start with the silly one.
Okay.
Myron, with your career in teaching, you probably could answer this best. When did the in-vogue term of SCOTUS begin? Because in the 80s, I don't remember it at all. We'd say the Supreme Court, but through, I don't know, television shows and movies, they've popularized this SCOTUS. So they even say it on the news that way.
Well, Supreme Court of the United States,
yeah,
SCOTUS,
I don't know for sure. I think it started with the Internet, because you know how the Internet operates.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody abbreviates everything. Because they want everything so quick. That's the first time I heard the term.
Okay, so it is pretty new then. Okay,
I think so. I'm not sure.
The serious one is there's the Texas abortion case where I think through zoning they claim to be protecting the rights of women by putting all these rules on clinics about distance for the doctor would have to travel and et cetera. And so that's up before the Supreme Court now. Where do you think about that? Oh, and it's relevant to the presidential election in that Ted Cruz is avowed that in a way that no Republican has ever said, even rape victims cannot get abortions.
Well, here the case title is Women's Whole Health versus Hellerstedt. And there's another one, Zubit versus Burwell. And the one in Texas, I believe, is am I not correct on that, Kevin?
Yes, it's
yeah.
Whole Women's Health. Yeah. Somebody.
And it's what it is women's reproductive health rights. Texas has restrictive abortion law, and the commentators on this say that there could be closures of many clinics, and that's because the clinics have to comply with a level of. I think close to hospitalization, their doctors have to be authorized and approved at local hospitals, and therefore it's something that Planned Parenthood and other organizations are saying is unnecessary, and what it's going to do is really hurt women who want to have an abortion if they feel that they have, they feel that's going to be the best thing for their life. So, but let me get some comments for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Well, let me combine the Please. Abortion issue with affirmative action because
Please.
Until Scalia's death, the way it lined up what was pretty clear. You had four conservatives who were against affirmative action, against abortion. You had Scalia, Alito, Roberts, and Thomas. And then you had the four liberals, right? Breyer, Kagan, Ginsburg and Sotomayor, and then you had Kennedy in the middle,
right?
Right. So you take Scalia out of the picture on those two issues, and the conservatives only have three votes. All right? They mm-hmm. might have Kennedy.
Yeah, they might.
They might have Kennedy, in which case it would be a tie.
Yeah.
But the liberals have their four, and they might get Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
So
you feel there's
if
still
you're
some
a liberal,
potential there. Okay.
Nothing bad can happen at this point, and something good might happen.
Yeah.
If you're a conservative, you're screwed on those issues.
Jeff, did you have something you wanted to say?
I was thinking along the same lines. In criminal, it's a little different analysis because unlike civil, where you're worried about changing the law, things that will affect a lot of people, in criminal, when you bring a case up on appeal, you have one client right now that the world has to stop. You have to take care of this one client, whether they're facing the death penalty, whether they're mm-hmm. facing a serious consequence. So the analysis is a little different. I would never advise a client not to take a case forward. But on the civil side, I think it's quite different. And there is a lot to lose by coming forward in a posture where you know you're fighting for, at best, a fourth vote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any comments from you on this, Gonzalo?
Yes, I just wanted to mention that the fact that some cases might come down split 4-4 has led some defendants, at least in the corporate sphere, to not even seek certiorari. For example, one of the more renowned examples is Dow Chemical settled a lawsuit for $835 million, and they specifically cited the death of Justice Scalia, that the fact that he was no longer on the court would hurt their ability to get the court to take up their case. So that was a situation where, at least from the business side, there was a sense that not having a reliable fourth or even fifth vote doesn't risk taking a case up all the way to the Supreme Court.
Let me throw this to you. And by the way, Kevin, thank you very much for both your silly and your serious question. Talking about money, Citizens United, this is the one that raised any limits on political contributions. This is a case that has been highly criticized by people who are knowledgeable in the constitutional
law. Obama
and,
in front of Congress.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do you see, I mean, this is a situation where the commentators are saying that this decision has permitted big business to really run the country.
Yeah.
What do you say, Mark?
Well, here's the problem. If this were an original proposition that hadn't been decided, and Justice Garland were on the court, I think it's pretty clear he would not vote to
in favor of
what the court did there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a revolutionary decision. He's not a revolutionary. The problem now is Citizens United is the law, and it takes five votes to overrule it. The concept of stare decisis comes into play.
Yeah.
Justices are reluctant to overrule prior cases like that. Same thing with the Heller versus U.S. case.
That's the gun case from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, a lot of people disagree with that. A lot of people think it was wrong. I think it was wrong.
And the decision was what, briefly?
That the Second Amendment gives a personal right to have a handgun in your home for self-defense.
Okay,
and now they're talking about the ramifications of that.
Yeah, can we
can
wear
you have
one
shotguns?
Wherever
can,
we go.
That's right. And there again, I don't think Garland would have voted for that, but to overrule it, I don't know. I'll give you an example of that. Roe versus Wade, the big abortion decision. Afterwards, a lot of later justices totally disagreed with that. They thought that was based on a wrong reading of the Constitution.
Really?
And yet they would not overrule it.
Yes.
They cut back on it substantially. Mm-hmm. Justice O'Connor wrote an opinion in 1994 where she said pretty much, I don't like this. It was a bad decision. But it's too late to overrule it, so we're going to cut back on it. And they might do the same sort of thing with Citizens United and maybe Heller.
On Roe versus Wade, can you very briefly tell us what does it stand for?
That the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause includes a right of privacy that which is not written in the 14th Amendment, or the Due Process Clause, and that unwritten right of privacy includes an unwritten right to abortion.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So let's see. Again, everybody, I'll give you the number again, toll-free, 866-798-8255. You're listening to Your Legal Rights, and we're talking about, if you came in a little bit late, the United States Supreme Court, eight justices at standstill. Those are my, that's my words. Is the court dysfunctional? And we've tried to give you different thoughts about this, whether it may be on the civil side or the criminal side. And I'd like to call on, let's see, I think it is Joan. Joan, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone.
Hi.
I would like to go back to the position that the Republicans are taking, and I don't understand why we aren't more outraged and vocal over the position they are taking, basically holding the nominee hostage based on the results of the election this fall. I don't believe there's any precedent for this, and I've often heard the argument that they're saying the Democrats would do the same thing if they were in our position. But it's my understanding that the democratically controlled Senate actually held hearings and approved a Reagan nominee during his last year.
I think you're correct. So I
think we should just be really shaming them mercilessly on their arbitrary stance when they claim, so often claim to be following the Constitution. I certainly don't think that there is a clause in the Constitution that says advise and consent unless the president happens to be in his final lame duck year.
That's very good. Okay. You are, by the way, Joan, are you an attorney?
No.
Are you going to law school, or are you going to go to law school? You sound like you're
no,
really...
Thank you. I've had my share of experiences with the law, which was always fascinating if it hadn't have been my own cases.
Well, thank you for calling. I think your points are very well taken, and turn your radio back up so you can hear some comments, would you? Gonzalo, do you have any comments on this?
You know, I think
about the Democrats. Would the Democrats do the same thing?
You know, I'm not so sure they would. And I think the nominee that was confirmed that you're thinking about, I might be wrong, but I think it was actually Justice Kennedy.
I think you're it right. I think it was Justice Kennedy. Yeah.
Well, it's too bad she doesn't vote in Alabama, where it would make a difference.
We can use that.
Some difference here.
Jeff, please.
What I also found interesting is that President Reagan, when it came to that nomination coming up, did the same thing that President Obama did this year. He picked somebody who was more moderate than his traditional picks, his traditional way of thinking, in order to accommodate those in the Senate and maybe get past that hurdle. And there were senators that were talking about maybe waiting if something came up, but when the nomination actually came in, they acted upon it and confirmed Justice Kennedy. The Republican Senate right now is not doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that a fairly moderate pick came through.
Yeah.
Their accommodation is to say, well, if you win the presidential election, we'll reconsider it, which I think that you're right to be outraged.
I think the most interesting scenario is the Democrats win the presidency. They also win the Senate. And whoever's the Democratic president nominates Obama to the Supreme Court.
Well, I've heard that. I've heard that, too. And you're not being facetious. You're being
serious.
Well,
he was a constitutional law professor.
You're being serious.
In,
yeah.
At University
yeah.
of Chicago.
I have heard that
not
also.
Not bad.
But, yeah. So there you are. Keep your fingers crossed. will you, Joan? And thank you very much for calling. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and now Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Program Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service program, and that number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Pardon me. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Hopefully you will be able to get a human being on the phone. And tell them what you want. Tell them what the problem is. They will do their best. That's the whole point of lawyer referral. Do their best to find you an attorney who's experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation. The rare exception, the charge for a half an hour consultation face-to-face with an attorney is $25 to $35 throughout the state of California. And I'm not trying to, I want you to understand, I am not trying to get business for lawyers, but this is a basic, really fine consumer service. And that money does not go to the attorney, it goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. So it's something to keep in mind should you have a legal problem and you want to have a basic understanding of what your rights are. All right, let's take another call from Mark. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to put forward the proposition that Republicans are being pretty savvy in their gamesmanship here. And this could be faulty logic, so I definitely want to get your opinion on this. But it seems to me that they've succeeded in getting a very centrist, you know, about the best nominee they could expect to get from a Democrat. And it seems like they are holding that nomination in their back pocket and waiting for what transpires in November. And if a Democrat gets elected, then they, you know, very promptly confirm this nominee. And if a Republican president is elected, then, of course, they'll have something that they like even better. So it seems like they're kind of having their cake and eating it, too, with doing what they're doing, disregarding the political fallout that I would actually personally minimize. I think people are so divided in this country that everybody that's a Republican is cheering for this strategy, and everybody that's a Democrat is booing at it. So anyway, that's sort of my premise, and I want your comments on that.
Jeff, comment, will you?
One thing I could see is if the Democrats do win the White House, the president could simply withdraw the nomination the very next day, particularly if the Democrats win back the Senate.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
that he would do it. I think that his nominee deserves more respect than that. But a true gamesmanship, a sure gamesmanship proposition would suggest that he could withdraw it, and then they could pick somebody who's a lot more left-wing.
Yeah.
Not only more left-wing, but younger. He's 63 years old, you know, and when Bush was president, he did a very good job of selecting the youngest possible people, so mm-hmm. they're on the court the longest. And 63 is not a terrific age. They could put in somebody in their 40s.
Well, that's true. They could. All right. We have a couple more minutes for those of you who haven't had a chance to call me. It's toll-free, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Let me put this out to the three of you. I am not speaking from the standpoint of being a Democrat or a Republican, but someone who is concerned about the law in this country and the rights of people. Do you feel that the Republican-controlled Senate now by Senator McConnell is really, aside from saving their seats when they are up for re-election, is really not doing the country any good? Myron, do you have a comment on
that?
Well,
McConnell is... He's not a lone ranger. He's a product
of this
deep, deep divide. You know, it starts with the Tea Party. You know, Trump is one of the results of that. These people won't compromise.
Huh.
And it's not just McConnell. And I don't know what you do about that. It runs so deep that you can't fix it with a speech. You can't fix it with being right. And I think it's going to last for a while.
Do you feel that this is something, a violation of one's duty to the people of the United States to take this type of position?
Oh, I
would you go
know.
That
I,
far?
Well, in a way, but I mean, that's politics. You know, I thought invading Iraq was a violation of that kind of duty, too. But, you know, I'm a lawyer. I deal with judges who supposedly don't do that type of thing. But when you get into Congress and the Senate, it's like anything goes.
Jeff, do you have a comment?
I do. While I agree with all of the propositions you just set forth, there's another angle, and that's the strong parallel. A lot of people in this country are very upset that the Senate is choosing not to act and is sitting on it. But isn't that very parallel with what the president's doing with immigration, where he's saying basically this administration is not kind of going to act to remove certain groups of people mm-hmm. that he finds worthy. He's not dictating what the law is or changing the law. He's merely saying, I'm going to basically set aside my constitutional duty to act. Mm-hmm. Nobody could force me to do it. And so far, nobody has been able to force him to do it. Mm-hmm. He's refraining from exercising that which has been put upon him to do, that which is his
That's
duty.
A good point.
And I think the Senate's doing the same thing.
That's really good.
What do you think? Gonzalo, you have the final word on that comment.
I'm actually going to disagree.
Good.
I think the president has authority to essentially defer action on immigration issues. It's basically prosecutorial discretion, as I understand it. The Senate, it does have discretion. What the Constitution says is that the Senate it's either president shall nominate someone to the Supreme Court upon the advice and consent of the Senate. Now, there seems to be at least a duty on the Senate to act, at least in my reading.
Yeah, yeah. It frankly annoys me, really, that we have this kind of a problem. As a consumer advocate for at least the last 30 years of my being a lawyer, I have a real problem with doing this kind of thing, and not in terms of what the people of this country want. And so I'm very disappointed.
In their defense, this isn't a real defense, but
Myron.
But I think you have to recognize that this is not just any nomination at any time.
Oh, no,
Citizens
I agree.
United is controlling American politics at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
If that gets overturned, everything gets flipped. The big money in politics goes out, and they can't afford that.
Yeah, yeah, that's the real problem. I think the big money in politics, in my opinion, is very dangerous.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
But that's their last hold on power. If they lose that, they lose a lot more.
I want to thank the three of you very much for coming on. It'll be interesting in the next, 6, 9, 10 months, what happens, and I'll invite you back if you'd like. I want to thank you very much, Jeff Hayden, Vice Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization, Gonzalo Martinez, Certified Specialist in Appellate Law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, and Myron Moskowitz, now Appellate Law Attorney, retired Professor of Constitutional Law at Golden Gate University. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean.
Wonderful to have you, the three of you here. Next week, by the way, everybody, we're going to be doing, as I mentioned a little bit earlier in the program, Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, and the compliance requirements for small business. My guest will be ADA compliance specialist and architect Bassem Altwal, attorney Martin Orlick, Carol Kahn, director of public service programs of the San Francisco Bar Association, and Regina Dick Andrizzi, director of the San Francisco Office of Small Business. And we'll be talking about what not only applies in San Francisco and California, but actually applies across the country. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Debbie Kennedy. Debbie, wonderful to have you here. Production assistant Martin McLean. This segment has been funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialties in 11 areas of the law. Additional funding of the program is provided by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.